I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. It's another brand spanking new episode of Is It Just Me, the podcast where we talk about all sorts of, well, garbage, really, let's be honest. Well, not garbage, but just like the really important trivial things. I'm your host, Joe Elvin, with co-host...
Hello, I'm James Williams.
Hi, yeah, that's James Williams. And we... Basically, James, isn't it? This is our...
It's our therapy, basically.
And it's our excuse to just drag a celebrity in and make them talk to us.
Yeah, make them fight with us, hopefully.
If you want a celebrity to talk to you, tell their agents that you have a podcast. Yeah. It's amazing what happens.
Exactly.
Yeah. Today we are joined to talk about all sorts of things, from religion to fights. Those two things kind of go together, don't they, in a big way. And Floordrobes with actor, comedian, writer, thesp, singer, I once learned, extraordinaire, Mr. Kevin Bishop.
Hello, you forgot tap dancer.
Oh, well, yeah, I didn't right. know
Don't
about
worry.
That.
Don't worry, yes,
Joe,
I was
you
tap
forget
dancer.
The tap dancing?
I'm going to need some season proof of that right
it's
now.
Fine. It happens a lot.
When did you last tap dance? When did you last tread the boards?
The last time I professionally tap danced was with Ronnie Corbett in 1988.
Okay, well, that's a good get, that one.
Yeah, it's a long time ago.
I mean, Ronnie Corbett, I met him
once. As a name drop
once.
Goes, that's a pretty damn good one.
Pretty big one. Yeah. The year before was with Lionel Blair. And Danny LaRue.
Oh, my God. We are firmly in the 80s now.
We really are in the 80s. We are. Neighbours has been on a couple of years. You know, it's good times.
And how was the hair? What was that looking like?
My hair, awful. And my mother had these lamé waistcoats made for me with sequins on them to make me stand out, which it did.
What, even standing next to Lionel
way.
Blair?
Yeah. No, I kind of blended in with Lionel. And Danny LaRue, back in the dressing room, it was a different story.
Oh, bless
you. Because how old were you when you started out, Kevin?
My very first professional job was age 7.
And how old are your little girls now?
They are 8 and 6.
Right, so that's crazy. Does Josh now feel like you've actually got children of age?
You've just put something in my mind there that I hadn't thought about before.
You know, when are they going to start, earning a living?
Well, they've already started, they're just not getting paid yet.
Right.
So other signs
they
there.
Won't be for a while, believe me.
Can you see them following your footsteps?
I can, actually. It's something that I think about all the time. And I think, you know, I'm... probably from the school, I don't think that kids should necessarily be famous. Yeah. I think kids should, by all means, act and dance and sing and do all those things that are fun to do when you're a child. But I don't know if I agree with them losing their anonymity as the age of a child.
But can you? What would have been your reaction as a young child? And I'm sort of like thinking, 10, 11, 12, if your parents are like, no. We can't have you doing that. We can't have you being in the spotlight in that way.
Well, it was a tricky one because I think if my father had had his way, then I would have been, doing a normal job. a long, long time ago. And I remember really embarrassingly, my dad phoned my agents once when I was about 21, unbeknownst to me. And I found this out about 5-6 years later. And he phoned my agent and went,
Kevin's very depressed. He's not getting any of these jobs. And I just wonder why he's not nailing these jobs. any reasons? Anything? Maybe he's not serving. I don't know. Maybe he's not asserting himself. Or because my dad, so, you know, works for the Citizens Advice Bureau or whatever, probably had 3 job interviews in his life. Yeah. And he just couldn't understand why, you know, these job interviews I wasn't nailing. I was like, it's very different, Dad. It's an audition. You know,
I'm
like,
7.
I'm 7 and I wasn't right for the part.
You haven't talked about your hobbies enough from your CV.
I was a man, they wanted a female.
Your CV just wasn't varied enough.
Exactly.
Only your waistcoats had shone a bit brighter.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Wrong colour. Waistcoat.
Yeah.
So it was interesting. So I mean, very, very very strange upbringing, you know, in that sense, because my parents were normal people. My mother was not involved in the industry in any way. And she was from a large Irish Catholic family, you know, working class, and not a lot of opportunity. But my mum told me a story once that she said Lambda came to her house, her mother's house, and offered her a scholarship at RADA. And they said, we think this girl's very talented. My mother was only about 14, 15. And I said, could we give her a scholarship to RADA? And my grandmother said, well, thanks for coming in. Thank you very much. Thank you. goodbye. And then my mum said, well, can I go? And she said, no, you will type.
Oh, wow.
Because, you know, acting just wasn't a, you couldn't be an actress. Yeah. Not from that background. You know, it was like ridiculous. So that stuck with my mother, I think. And when she saw that, you know, I was showing signs of, I would say, precociousness. She would say talent.
Flamboyance.
Yeah, absolute
festiveness.
Absolute fabulousness, darling, actually, I'd say. She said, well, I'm going to send him to a drama club, which was the Patricia Hammond School of Dramatic Art, which was in Bromley. And that's where it started. And
look at you now.
And look at me now, hanging in by the skin of my teeth.
Well, no, you're properly, as an actor, you are properly treading the boards in the West End right now.
Yes.
And I came to see you treading said boards last week in Lady Windermere's Fan. It's part of the Oscar Wilde season.
Yes.
Directed by Kathy Burke and also starring Jennifer Saunders.
You're really slumming it, aren't you?
Yeah.
Keep trying.
Yeah, you know.
Keep going.
Yeah.
this is proper theatre. It's interesting because I get offered theatre jobs and I love to do theatre. It's my favourite thing. But when you sort of agree to do something like an Oscar Wilde play, you think, oh, great, this is a great theatre, I'll do it. And then you read it and you go, oh, my God, how do you make somebody speak like that and be and look like a real person? Because it's you know, the dialogue is 120 years old. Mm. So Kathy did a great job with cutting out all the repetition and any of the sort of, you know, the long-winded stuff that doesn't really work anymore. And it just feels a little bit more updated for a younger audience. Mm.
I would definitely say so. Everybody, it's really funny. Mm. And there's moments where, even though some of the language is antiquated in the phrasing, there's something about, I think, the performances kind of bring that modern wink to it. Mm. So we know that you know it's kind of antiquated speech, but it's working on that more modern level. It was really, really enjoyable.
I mean, despite its antiquated speech patterns, which it has, the interesting thing about the play is it feels more relevant now than it probably would have felt 20 years ago. You know, there's a, you know, Oscar Wilde's stance on morality is fascinating. Mm. I mean, it's fascinating now. 120 years ago, this must have been, you know, mind-blowing.
And it asks all the right questions about a woman's place that kind of feels very relevant today.
Yeah.
And it's just great fun, Kevin. Let's not overcomplicate it.
No, it's great fun.
Yeah.
And I think I've seen Oscar Wilde plays put on before. I've seen The Importance of Being Earnest, and I saw A Woman of No Importance. And the thing is, I think that often, because it's Oscar Wilde, people think, oh, this has to be portrayed by really serious actors, you know, done very stiff, very serious, because that's what Oscar Wilde would have liked, and the Oscar Wilde Society would love it if it was done in its very serious, proper theatre way. And we haven't changed any of the dialogue, we haven't changed any of the plot, any of the structure, yet it's really funny.
Yeah.
So it's all down to intonation.
Yeah.
And Well, I think that this is, it is a comedy. There's
but,
no
but,
doubt.
Well, also, you could argue Shakespeare. You know, people still laugh at Shakespeare, don't they? I mean, and I don't mean people go and pretend to laugh at Shakespeare. Because when I was growing up,
I pretend to laugh at Shakespeare. I pretend I'm clever and I laugh at
it. I will freely admit, I'm not the most studied Oscar Wilde student, but I was really blown away by what would have been really quite revolutionary things for him to say about feminism and things like that in that play. Mm. I was really impressed with, he was like sticking up for the girls in that.
Yeah. So go and check it out, basically, everyone that's listening, if you haven't already. Because you're on until...
We're on until April 7th.
It's quite a long run.
Yeah, it is quite a long
run. Theatre.
The Vaudeville Theatre on the Strand, yes. Yeah. And it's worth it to see Jennifer Saunders sing.
Yeah, it's quite something. Yeah.
And also, from the person I was most excited who's in this play is Joseph Marcella, who was the butler from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Oh my God,
so that
really?
I literally nearly passed out when I found out he was in it. Because,
that's awesome.
Yeah, I think he's incredible. And he's the loveliest chap as well. Really nice.
Also, I do know, well, on quite good authority, because you actually did it on Sunday Brunch, you do an amazing Kathy Burke impression, don't you?
I do an impression of Kathy Burke, much to Kathy's disgust. The problem is, I do impressions of everybody. If I've met them... And I can do them. I will do them to add flavour to a story.
Because from a Star Stories, anyone that hasn't seen that, is it on 4 on Demand?
Oh my
it
God.
Is brilliant.
Probably.
It must be.
Yeah,
go and check it out.
The first time I met Kevin, I was really starstruck to meet him because of Star Stories.
I remember.
Really? You liked it that much?
I introduced you to some friends of mine one time who were so starstruck. They were, oh my God, Kevin Bishop follows you on Twitter. I was going, okay.
Yeah.
And they were like, because people love that show, because it was... funny, and your impersonations were brilliant, so go figure, you can do a good Kathy Burke.
Well, Kathy was, it was interesting, Kathy phoned me and I was putting a tent up at Wilderness Festival and she said, "Is now a good time to talk, Kev, because you know, I know that you got kids and that and you're probably busy, I don't take up too much of your time, mate, you know." And I said, oh no, now I mean, because obviously I'm a huge fan of Kathy Burke's first and foremost, and also she's just a very good friend of mine for many years and I've never worked with her, so I didn't really know that she was going to offer me a job. She went, "I saw a photograph of you the other day and you had the moustache in a photograph and I thought, oh my God, Kevin could play a right good lord, you know what I mean? And I don't know if you want to do it or not, but you could play a right good lord if you want to play Darlington, you know, Lord Darlington." And then she said, "Listen, he's got a very famous line and I'm thinking about taking it off you and giving it to someone else I know, maybe just to rock the apple cart a little bit." And then I realised the line that she wanted to take away from me was, "We're all in the gutter, but some of us are looking at the stars."
And you were like, "No way."
Well, I just said, "Are you really going to, do you think?" She went, "No, I thought about it. You was right. I was wrong. Yeah, maybe keep that one. Yeah, I might take a couple other ones off, you know, if that's all right with you." But she is, I mean, what I love about Kath is that she loves actors and she is a fantastic director. I mean, she's been directing since the 80s. I mean, someone said the other day, I think Kathy's sort of, you know, embarking into directing is quite a good thing recently. And it's like, well, she's been directing plays since the 80s. She's an amazing director. And but I think what it is her eye for cast is really, really good. Like she's cast this in such a way that it feels completely original. Yeah. Because she hasn't gone for those, you know, people would have pushed her into casting certain people that probably would have cast in the play that we've seen 1,000 times.
That's
of this
right,
version,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So she's cast well, and she's I don't think anybody would have given me this shot other than Kathy. I really can't think of another director who would have.
But also the dynamic, I should imagine, between her and Jennifer, because if they've known, can you forget that, you know, Kathy was integral to so many of the classic French and Saunders piss takes.
Yeah.
She was in them, you
exactly,
know?
Exactly.
So I'd imagine they have a really good dynamic as well.
Yeah, they do. I mean, Jennifer's just such a sort of, you know, such a lovely person to have around, because she's not, despite her, you know, godlike sort of, you know, fame and star quality that she's got, she doesn't use that in any way at all. In fact, we had a member of the cast kept referring to her as Jennifer Saunders, and she just said, "Please, please, please, stop. It's just Jennifer. Just call me Jen. Please, please, keep saying Jennifer Saunders. Please, please, please." And she's just lovely. You know, she's just lovely to have around.
Okay, Jennifer Saunders. I'm sorry. I'll stop doing that. Jennifer Saunders.
Just Jennifer. Yeah. To her dear friends, I guess.
I call her Dawn French.
But, no, that's her favourite. Yes, she loves that. Yeah. You're so subversive. She reminded me when I saw Jennifer Saunders the other night. Sorry, I just can't resist it. That it's not the first time you two have worked together. I'd totally forgotten.
No. I worked with Jennifer when I was 14 on Muppet Treasure Island. So a very, very long time ago.
Everybody was in that.
Everybody was
in
that.
I think I was in that.
Yeah. Even I was in there.
They'll have anyone.
Yeah, they'll, have, they'll literally have anybody.
Those Hensons.
Yeah. Ridiculous. But no, it was a crazy job because I remember being told that Jennifer was playing Mrs. Bloveridge in the film. And then it just got more and more ridiculous. And it just got Mrs. Bloveridge, played by Jennifer Saunders. And it was Billy Connolly playing Billy Bones, which I nearly passed out. And then it was Tim Curry's playing Long John Silver. I mean, it was absolutely insane, you know, like an insane job to do as a kid. But I remember Jennifer used to be very shy, like really shy, like shy of me. And I was 14, you know, and now she's so much... She's come completely out of her shell socially and stuff, and yeah, it's interesting because to have all that time between us when we worked together, 14 years, you know, God, what was it, 23 years ago or something, wow, to working together again, and it feels lovely, full circle to do it, you know.
Absolutely.
I think she's reached that golden age of giving no fucks.
Exactly.
Where she really doesn't.
So she's so comfortable in her own skin, and it makes her really easy to be around.
Mm. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I absolutely, I feel like that as well. I feel like that with Jen. And also funny with Kath as well.
Yeah.
Because I think Kath, for a few years, Kath was quite shy. And Kath sort of doesn't like the, you know, she's such a woman of the people. Mm. But when people come up to her and say, oh, I am smoking a fag, you know, like sometimes.
But she loves that.
She could be, yeah, she doesn't like it because what it does is it puts a very humble person in the spotlight. And she just feels awkward. But,
yeah. And it's also the people who think they're the first ones to do that.
Yeah.
That's what's that all about?
That should hold you back.
Yeah.
Like, I was thinking, they're going to have heard that a million times before.
My mate's dad said he saw Steve Coogan in the car park of his flats once, and he was just getting out of his car, and his dad went, aha! And Steve went, great, you're the first one today. Well done. Have a nice day. Great. Good for you, mate. Great. Just like absolutely gutted, you know.
Never meet your heroes, because that's the thing. I would say something stupid, and then that's how I would think of that person.
Or just go for the really obscure job where they had one line.
Yeah.
They were like, they forgot they even had that job. I always quote that at them. At least they were like, shit, I forgot.
Because then they'll go, wow, that's pretty niche.
You know me.
Yeah.
You're a fan.
People that stop me and ask me about the weird little French sort of art house films that I make, I always stop and talk to them about it because I can't quite believe
that they've seen it. Is that code for something?
French art house.
Yeah.
Is definitely. I mean,
full nudity.
Yeah, check them out.
You are sporting quite the porn stash there these days for the Oscar Wilde role.
Oh, yeah. Or your own, of course. Does anyone actually think it's not your own?
Yes. People constantly say to me when I walk out, it's quite interesting how rude people can be about facial hair, like moustache. Like, because it's weird, because I just generally don't comment on anyone's appearance for you know, out of risk of insulting them, and particularly women, you know. Yeah. But I go to the school run, people go, what's that horrible thing growing on your lip? And I say, well, it's for a part. What's yours for? You know, and suddenly they're all really upset. But it's like it happens to me all the time. People can be so outspoken about things like that, or if you're wearing a pair of, you know, outlandish shoes or something. People go, what are those awful shoes you're wearing? You know, but you'd never say it to anyone else.
I do think, though, a moustache is divisive. Because, you know, I mean, I've got a friend of mine who's currently trying to cultivate one, shall we say, and his other half is not happy about it. I mean, so I do think, how is your lovely Cass? How's she coping with it?
Well, Casta hates it. But the reason Casta hates it most is because she thinks that when I have a moustache, my character changes completely. And so if I have to have a moustache for a part, which I have actually had to have about 4 or 5 times now, I'm just cornering that market.
Yeah.
But I grow the beard first, and then I shave the beard off and leave the moustache. And she walks in and she says, oh, great, he's back.
Yeah.
And she's convinced that I'm a different person.
Is that why you get the parts? Because you can grow it the quickest?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
Some people really can't.
No, they can't grow it. But this is kind of the strongest part of my facial hair. Elsewhere, it's a bit patchy.
I have the same thing, so it's really annoying. So I can't grow like a beard.
Anywhere else.
But the moustache comes in super fast. And
please,
it's
don't ask me about mine.
You should grow a moustache. I mean,
I couldn't. I mean, I would look lewd. Somebody actually came up to me a few weeks ago and said, I think you look good with a moustache. I went, do you hate me?
Do you know, every now
I
and
think
again.
You would.
And it was only my trainer, my old trainer at the gym, Camelia, who used to notice it. Every now and again, I have one seriously long white hair that grows from my chin and I can't see it. And then every now and again, she would just come up to me and pluck it off.
Ping.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so if it's there today, will you tell me?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But, yeah.
My wife has one of those. I remember when
she'll
when
thank we you.
She'll be really grateful you've told us that.
She just had one little hair on her neck like that, and she used to have to pluck it all the time.
It's terrifying. It feels like, what is this the start of?
No, yeah. Puberty.
On one hand, it's good to get
old. One day.
Finally. Yeah.
You get older, you give fewer fucks. On the other hand, you start growing hair in weird places.
More hair. Yeah. Is it just me who thinks it's okay to be spiritual / religious? I'm not sure how religious I am. I think it's okay, though.
I think this came from a point where I think for a long time, religion and spirituality was deemed as a bit uncool. And I don't mean to offend anyone when I say it, but I just think it was, especially when you're a teenager, I guess, growing up.
We're talking about religion. Someone's going to be offended.
Yeah.
Let's just own that.
So I just think, you know, but now I do think you've almost gone to a place now where you get chastised in the same way for being religious. And I often wonder, you know, because I do have friends of mine who are religious. I'm not particularly spiritual or religious, but I would never deign to undermine their feelings about it. But I do feel like there's a lot of people, especially when it becomes political, I know we talk about politics often.
Yeah.
That's what tends to happen, isn't it? Your religion can infuse or often inform your political leanings. And I think then by putting up the fight, you can sometimes totally dismiss and disregard someone's entire belief system, which I think is where this is coming from. You know, I think obviously you can choose not to believe a certain way, but you shouldn't totally then dismiss somebody else's, I think. And I just think maybe we're getting to a place now where actually it's becoming acceptable again to be honest about, you know, being religious. I do think a lot of my friends for a long time would actually certainly not be as open about their religious leanings because they thought they would get totally berated for it.
Or ridiculed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or just thought, you know, or you're not liberal.
They'd be crucified.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think the thing is,
politically, career-wise, crucified.
The idea is you cannot be a liberal, well-informed individual and be religious. There's this real, I think, way of thinking that you can't somehow...
But you can be the president of the United States.
Exactly.
Which is really interesting. You can believe the world was made a few hundred years ago, and that's fine.
Be religious and grab every pussy in sight and still be the president. Yeah.
Exactly. Now, it's interesting because I was brought up a Catholic. By my Irish Catholic mother. And, you know, we were made to go to church every Sunday, much to our, you know, we hated it. Like, I literally would hide in a cubbyhole to not, well, as I feel now, waste my Sunday. You know, now, obviously, that's just my personal opinion and that's just how I feel. But, like, I can't get those Sundays back on my deathbed from my parents that made me go. But as I've become older, I removed myself so far from religion. In fact, the mere sort of whiff of religion was like the ultimate shutdown to me. And I just wasn't interested. But as I've gotten older, I've gotten much more into spirituality and what I believe to be. I believe I am a spiritual person, but I just don't follow any kind of pomp or ceremony or religious anything, you know, like that's, I just don't have any kind of leanings towards that whatsoever. But, and I believe it causes a lot of problems.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And I think globally, obviously, we can't deny that. It causes a lot of issues.
Well, I think people who believe so strongly, you know, I think it's like, I think extreme of anything is bad.
Yeah, without people, room for other views.
Because I do believe there are people who can happily coexist with other religions because, you know, they realise religion is a personal thing. It's not about forcing your beliefs on other people. And people who are genuinely religious, I think, are very compassionate and very easygoing people, you know. I think it's just the extreme people that then try to force their... Well, it's like every kind of extremism, isn't it?
So. But I think in terms of, like, your health, I think it's important to, you know, I mean, if we can sort of be drinking green juices and, you know, kale and sort of, you know, macrobiotic food or, you know, vegan and whatever, that's the body sorted. Mm. But I just think in terms of, like, your head, if you have some kind of faith, whatever that faith is, whether it be Catholic, Muslim, or you just believe in the God of ice cream, or whatever that is, I think that's an important thing to have in your life. So it makes you not in charge of the world, your own world.
And I think that what you've just said, I think wellness has kind of become the new religion.
Yeah.
I mean, what religion is basically spawned from the fact that we all know we're going to die and we're all grappling with trying to find meaning in that. And I actually think that, like, clean eating, wellness, all of that is the new thing that people throw their whole faith behind.
Yeah.
That, you know, but it's not going to stop you dying, but they're
certainly as devout as some,
yeah,
you know.
Well, exactly.
Well, it's funny. I've always had, like, before I even thought about spirituality, what it even meant when I was a young kid, I genuinely always believed that I would be an actor. You know, like, I genuinely just thought, I'll be an actor, you know. And I always had this saying when I was younger. I always believed that if I gave something, I always got it back tenfold. And it's still my belief, you know, if you give it freely and you give it for the right reasons, then it always comes back. And that just sounds like superstitious nonsense, because it is a little bit, if you think about it. But it's always felt true to me. Yeah. So that's my own religion, if you
but
like.
I feel, you know, the same. I was saying earlier, before you got here, I don't know. I'm a believer in destiny. I'm a believer in fate to a degree. And I remember stupid things happened to me. And you just attach meaning to what you want to, don't you? But I remember years ago when I'd only been in this country about 3 months. It was cold. It was miserable. I didn't have much money. And I was really at a crossroads thinking, do I go back to Australia or not? And I was at a friend's house in the days of blank cassettes. And I picked up this cassette that was halfway through the spool, didn't have anything. It said Elvis Costello on it. And I thought, if I put this on and it plays my favourite Elvis Costello song, I'm going to stay. And I put it on, and there was literally 2 seconds, and it went straight into Every Day I Write the Book. And I was
wow.
like,
yeah.
Okay. And I did. I stayed.
Yeah.
And it's things like that that I know it sounds stupid.
Yeah.
But you do, you look for meaning. Everybody looks to attach meaning to something.
I think it's important on this subject that we do touch upon the whole fair weather religious thing. So I think I'm very much like that. I'm somebody that will often turn, because I'm not religious now at all. I used to be like you, Kevin. I was ready to go to church as a kid, but kind of resented it. And then when I became an adult, made my own choices, I chose not to. But I will say this now, you know, you always turn to it. And it's weird. I have friends who are not religious, but the second they get married, they've got to get married in church.
Mm-hmm.
It's really weird, isn't it? But I mean, certainly I would go so far as to say in times of grief, you know, when you've lost somebody. And one of my friends' dads passed away not that long ago. And, you know, it was the first time I've gone to a funeral. And I haven't gone to that many, but I went to a funeral and it was a humanist ceremony. So her dad was not religious. He was atheist. But I can honestly say it was one of the most moving sort of services I've ever been to, because it really spoke to me, because it wasn't wrapped up in a lot of religious, dare I say, claptrap and cliches.
Yeah.
It was just talking on a very normal human level.
Yeah.
And I walked out of there going, that's the funeral I want for me. Because, like I said, it's
noted.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's communication, isn't it? I mean, I think that's the problem with, you know, in my case, the Catholic Church, is that if I go to, because I still have to go to many funerals, I've got an enormous family, many christenings, many weddings, because I've got 58 first cousins on my mother's side. So, I mean, I have to go, even though I am no longer a religious, Catholic religious, I still have to go to church quite frequently. And, you know, I listen to the words and I think, oh my God, people are just reciting these words. Are they actually thinking about what they're saying? And the truth is that they're not. You know, I know all the words, and I still don't know what any of it means. And I think that's half the problem, is that, you know, it's not been adapted. It's not been abridged. Kathy Burke has not abridged the Bible.
We need to send her in,
so we can all understand
it,
and she can bring it into a younger audience. That is the problem I find with this very sort of the very old trad services that we're used to.
Yeah, but we did a feature in Glamour sometime last year where I got very religious women to talk about what it had done to their mental health, and it had affected their mental health in a really positive way. And I've got nothing but respect for that. If that's your faith delivery service, if that's your lifeline to sanity and comfort, I've got not a problem with it. It's when it starts to be judgmental, when it starts to demarcate what's right and wrong for everybody else.
Exactly. Yeah. I really, really struggle with elements of the Muslim religion and stuff because of the sort of, you know, because of the burqas and the things. I mean, I really struggle with a lot of their beliefs, you know, and yeah, I respect them, you know, it's one of those things. I think it's each to their own, and everyone's entitled to do what they want to do. But, You know, there are obviously extremists in every single religion. We've seen it across the board. I mean, the one for me that's probably the most palatable one for me, who's not really into the ceremony or whatever, is Buddhism, you know, because I find that that's basically about being a good person, and it's not about yesterday, it's about today.
You just hit the nail on the head for me, because I feel like a lot of what we're talking about is just don't be an asshole. You know, some of the people, the loveliest, most compassionate people I know, are not religious people.
Yeah.
But they know the difference between right and wrong intrinsically.
And don't be an asshole in the name of God, because I'm pretty sure God, whatever it is, doesn't want you to walk around being the big prick.
No,
you know?
Exactly. So
I'd like to think so.
No.
Yeah. Maybe he does. Yeah. Maybe he does. Maybe they're the ones that get rewarded being massive pricks. Yeah. I think there's something in that. Definitely. Ooh,
tomorrow's a new day for me then.
Yeah. You guys are going to be fine.
Oh, I don't know about that.
You're going to live forever.
The things we've revealed in this pod cupboard, we're going to hell in a handbasket, aren't we, Joe?
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So next up, I mean, this is quite sort of funny given what we just discussed.
It just leads in, really, doesn't
it? I know. Well, you wouldn't get very far on this show if you believed in this, but is it just me who thinks it's totally fine to not get involved in arguments and totally sit on the fence?
Oh,
yes,
yeah.
It fucking is, you.
It's, I mean, it's, as if.
I can.
I wish
cannot.
I could sit on the fence.
You know, it's so important. So I write a lot with, and I write with various other people. It works with two. It never fucking works with three people. It just doesn't work. Because especially if that third person is the fence guy.
Oh, I thought you were going to give us a name then.
Oh, no. Name, if they're listening... Yeah.
They know who they are.
He knows who he fucking is. And it's the bane of my life. But
oh, yeah, because I never thought about that. Because I always assumed it would be better to have three. Because obviously you'd cast a vote.
If you've got three very opinionated people, it's great. Yeah. It usually ends in arguments. But... you can have time to think about it. But if you've got one person who just doesn't really like the awkwardness of this people disagreeing I like what you say, but I want him to employ me.
Oh, God, that's so annoying.
It's so irritating.
Yeah.
And then you've got that thing where the person the other person that you don't agree with leaves the room and they go, I agree with you.
Oh, yeah,
you're so right. And I say, well, fucking say something.
Oh, that's awful. That's annoying.
Many years ago, I had two men who I reported to. They were both my boss. And one used to do that to me. Used to say, listen, I agree with you, but I can't say in front of you. Yeah, why does that leave an employee?
Yeah,
I know.
It's ridiculous.
I know. It's the worst situation. So I had a rule after like my fifth sort of, you know, the third person experience thing. And I just said, right, that's it. It's me or one other person, you know, so we can literally just fight this over like adults rather than sit there going, you know, because I think that's the other thing as well, is that when there's a third person, it almost makes conflict even worse.
Yeah.
And so in my life in general, I very rarely want to say to someone, you know what, I think so-and-so said this about me and I feel... I just go straight to the person. I don't really muck around with third persons and asking for people's advice, because I just find that really that's... A, slagging people off, and B, it never really works, and it always comes to hit you square on in the face anyway.
And I think a lot of what you're talking about, it comes from people being really terrified of confrontation.
Yeah.
When it doesn't have to be an ugly riot mess, and it can actually, I used to find this all the time as a manager, you two go and talk this out, this is ridiculous. And the minute they actually discussed something, it was diffused immediately.
I do get it though, because I think we're all coming at this from the same page. I think we're all possibly quite straight up people who, if you piss me off, I'll tell you there and then. I don't let things build.
Yeah. Well, with the caveat, where my family's involved, I just stay hell out of it.
Oh, me too.
Because I've always got one on the phone from Australia, then the other one on email. Yeah. And that's really hard to navigate. Yeah. I find it hard to take sides in a family.
But I think I have to sit on the fence with my mother. Yeah. I mean, I have to sit on the fence. I mean, I don't just sit on the fence. I just say, I'm not talking about this.
Yeah,
I'm not talking about this.
I try to do that.
This conversation is over.
Yeah.
You know? Because it's that thing of like, you know, I'm the oldest of five kids. So we're all varying sort of ages. And my mum will do this thing where she'll say, do you know your brother came home the other day and he had this, £200 on a pair of trainers. I mean, I think that's a lot of money. And so, and I'm going,
Because I'm the oldest, and you know that that's going to get. Well, I mean, Kevin agrees that that was
too much money. Like, and then they're saying, "Did you tell mum you thought it was too much money?"
Awful.
But you see, you have more restraint than me, because my take on this initially was, I wish I could be more of a fence sitter, because my problem is, I'm not somebody that seeks out drama, but I'm also the person that. I always feel strongly about everything. That's why we do the show. but, you know, so if I see something happening, I will pretty much always have an opinion on it. And I find it very hard to not share my opinion.
Yeah.
And I do sometimes forget that not everybody lives their life that way. Some people genuinely are not. They are terrified of confrontation.
And I find that so frustrating.
But I don't think they're wimps. I don't think it's a wimpy thing. I think they are. It's a bit like having. I guess some people are very shy and they're crippling themselves. Some people literally they get so stressed. And I see it on some of my friends' faces. The second that me and my friends, you have a very kind of abrupt loving relationship where we are so honest with each other in a slightly cutting way sometimes, but only because there's that shorthand you have with really good friends. But I can see some of my other friends getting slightly tense about it, because they'd be like, oh no, they're going to fall out, and I'm like, that's not a falling out, that's just us being us, you know? But I think there are some people who literally can't even go there on any level.
Openness is so important. I mean, I remember I used to work with this guy, and I'm not going to say who it is, but he had this thing where when he didn't want to answer, he was so frightened of confrontation. We'd be on this job, and I'd say, "Listen, there's a restaurant up the road. It's Thai, and we're going to go there. We booked a table for 8. Are you going to come, or are you going?" And he'd go, "I don't think I'm going to come, actually." And he'd say no through a yawn, and then it became like everything was going, "Oh, I think we should take the M1 and not go on the other road." And you go, what are you saying? I can't hear you because you're yawning. And then I realised that he was basically so frightened of actually saying, disagreeing, he would yawn. He would yawn the answer.
That's quite genius, actually.
It was a weird sort of tick.
It's like a nervous tick.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And if he's listening to this, he'll know who he is, and he'll be paranoid about it.
If you're listening, you can come on the podcast and defend yourself anytime.
Come your way through.
Come and talk us through your weird
Let's
tick.
Let's talk to you about religion, Mr.
I guess in my one weird caveat to what I was just saying, though, is I will now say, and I do feel bad about it sometimes, but when it comes to social media fallout and I see things being said, it can be so ugly, I don't even get involved in that. And that's when I do sit on the fence, because I actually feel like that is it's a climate where everyone is so angry and no one's even ready to listen to you sometimes. And I totally do not engage now, because I feel like I'm just going to get slaughtered and crucified no matter what I say.
My favourite on that was seeing all my Facebook friends ready to stab each other over the Scottish referendum. I've never seen anything like it. Like, people who I thought were... like all friends, all screaming at each other. It was, and that's when I didn't know enough about that issue.
No.
Thank God. But
Well, it's funny, because I think we're actually. I mean, I know it feels like quite a tumultuous time for politics and quite a scary time to be alive. But I actually really love this time, because I feel like for the first time ever in my life, I feel totally engaged with politics. I care about who's politician, and I care about all these things that are happening in our world right now. And I think that the first thing for me, like when Brexit happened, because I'm a working class kid, you know, and I've come through now, and I'm in this little echo chamber now of all my lefty friends, you know, they're working show business and whatever. But on Facebook, I'm still connected to my old schoolmates. Mm. And when Brexit was happening and all my little echo chamber of, you know, very middle class sort of, you know, showbiz type people were saying, it's never going to happen. Mm. I mean, it's just never going to happen. No way. Not nowadays. People are just people. I mean, we love you. I mean, we holiday, you know, every year in Italy. And then I was listening to my mates from school, you know, who are like, you know, skint Tories and who believe or sort of can't make their mind up whether they're a Tory or they're, you know, they're like Nigel Farage. So I had of this real voice and this this pretend voice, and I remember thinking, you know what, Brexit's gonna happen, that we're gonna leave the EU. I can just feel it. Yeah, and I believe that, you know, Nigel Farage has had so much success and Brexit has happened because people feel that I blame political correctness completely. People feel that they can't say how they feel, and like a bad illness, it's better out than in. You know what I mean? You got to get that stuff out, whether it be. I think we're too quick to shut people down about their opinions. You know, I think it's like, let's not shut you down and tell you it's bad, just bad for you to even think that.
I agree.
Find out why you think it and talk about it.
But again, going back to the whole fence sitting thing, what does upset me is, you know, and I do always say this, in Australia, where Joe is from, you know, you're not allowed to not vote. You know, you're actually punished and penalised if you don't vote. And it's the fence sitters in this
country.
Don't
tell them that I haven't for quite some time.
No, but you know what I'm saying? I would abide by any election result if I knew the entire country had turned out. And actually, what annoys me is when I know that 30 or 40% of this country didn't even get off their arses to vote in the first place. Yeah. That's when I find, especially when it's a close result, that's what annoys me.
Yeah.
But that's when fence sitting isn't a joke. But hey, God, we've got a bit serious, haven't we?
I just think we should never have been given the option to vote on shouldn't have been given a referendum on Brexit. Considering we get, you know, such, you know, one way traffic from the media and such biased, you know, reviews from the media. I mean, people, you know, believe the Daily Mail.
Both ways,
I feel I've always felt like, oh my God, how can you let people that are so misinformed vote on something that's so important? Yeah. And, you know, and I don't think they should have ever been given that chance.
I'm really scared that this might be just me who has what's known in the fashion world, certainly wasn't in the glamour office, as a floordrobe, which means
more clothes on the floor than in the
wardrobe. Yeah, well, that's never true in my case, but there's
that's because it's impossible.
There's a rolling stock, sort of like scattered on various couches, some on the floor, I will admit, because I was looking for this black jumper I'm wearing today in a stress rage this morning in about 30 seconds. So the rest is waiting there to go back in. Maybe Friday, if I get round to it. I'm a disaster.
See,
is it just me?
No, well, it is you. Only because I actually was like you. Like, there was always a chair in my room.
I was like you.
I was like you before I sought help.
Before the pills.
Yes.
Before I found God.
I'm a great doctor.
I found God and my wardrobe and everything is good again. No, I made a pact because I was a terrible person for chucking things at the end of my bed, on the chair. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, God, my room's always a mess. And I just suddenly decided to introduce this quite simple filing system. If it's clean, it goes back it's in the wardrobe. And if it's dirty, it's in the washing basket.
Yep.
And if you are that ruthless about
revolutionary.
It, no, but if
yeah,
you are
that's just living like a normal person.
No, but if
it?
You are ruthless, what can I think? No, but you know what
if
happens.
If it's dirty, it goes in the wash basket.
No,
if it's clean.
No, but see what I think.
For me, if it's dirty, it just gets thrown out, right?
No,
my wife's one is it. If it's on the floor, it goes in the wash basket.
Well, yes.
Like, that's hers. Yeah. Even if it has never been worn, it needs to go into the cycle.
No, but can I tell you something really bad? What? Sometimes when I'm trying to do the James Williams revolutionary filing system, sometimes things go to the dry cleaners just because then they're off the floor and I don't have to find space for them in the wardrobe.
Yeah, but I was going to say, think dry cleaning items is where the problem lies. Because I was going to say, the problem you have with lots of floor robes is, and this is where my method falls down, because if it's a dry clean only item, you wear it and then you think, oh God, that's going to go to the dry cleaners now. Can I get another wear out of it? So you don't put it in the washing basket or back in your wardrobe because you think, oh, is it skanky to put it back in the wardrobe because it's not quite clean? I know, I'll leave it here in limbo.
You speak the truth.
The thing
is, I dry clean my clothes and they come back, I think, have they even dry cleaned them?
Well, quite.
Yeah.
They've just scraped something off their fingernail. £20.
That is the next dispatches waiting to happen, isn't it?
It is,
undercover.
Isn't it?
What happens in our dry cleaners.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest take on ever. But my problem with the floor drobe thing is that the one bugbear in my relationship with my wife is that it's not her, it's me. My time management is abysmal, you know. Especially it's pretty good for work and stuff. But when I'm going to some sort of an event, like the Glamour Awards or something like that, I will arrange my suit 5 minutes before I go. I won't prepare it. My wife's shopping today for a thing we've got next week, so she's sorting all that out. I'm on this thing with her. I won't sort it out until the day before. That's what I do. But so when I'm frantically pulling stuff out of my wardrobe, obviously it takes 2 seconds to pull it all out, and it takes fucking ages to put it all back in. So that is the issue. But my wife's thing is, like, she picks up stuff all the time. She's like, pick your stuff up off the floor. And I'm like, yeah, but it's sort of clean, so I don't want to put it back in the wardrobe.
I'm just leaving it for later.
I'm going to wear it tomorrow. Yeah. I'm going to wear those jeans tomorrow.
There's a grey area of our laundry, basically, which creates the floor drobe.
And I've got a bit of a mood board happening where things I pull out think, oh, yeah, that. I'll wear that this week. So I leave it out hanging up.
Oh, okay.
To remind me to wear it. I think basically I've got too many clothes, which Ross, who always listens, will totally agree with.
Well, my wife starts to do this thing where she started to just any clothes that, because I'm living in London at the moment. I live down on the beach, and my wife's where the kids are. But I'm living in London, so all these clothes that I've got that are sort of coming out of the system, and I'm not there to utilise them. My wife's hanging them up in my wardrobe. But this is the problem is now, as I went to get a shirt today, I pulled it out of the wardrobe, and it just looked like an old handkerchief. Where she refuses to iron any of my clothes. She just will not do that. She's like, I don't think my wife's ever ironed a single garment of my clothing, which is fine. Mm. I've ironed lots of hers, but she has never ironed any of mine. And I pull
more fool you.
More fool me, absolutely. But I pull it out of the wardrobe today, and I was like, she said, now you're making me late. And I said, no, actually you're making me late, because you've stuffed this into the tiniest little crack in my wardrobe. And now look at it. I've got to run it through a press.
I'm going to sit on the fence on that one.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Don't be that person, Joe.
Don't be that person.
I have to say, though, I did actually feel, when I finally got rid of my floor drobe, I felt like a proper grown-up. It was one of those things that
I'm never going to feel like a proper grown-up.
It kind of wound me up. It's a bit like when I finally had the revelation to make my bed every day makes you feel better about yourself.
Yeah.
And I'm full of these, like, groundbreaking ideas.
Well, that sort of miscellaneous shit drawer as well by the side bed that you just... I keep opening it. Yeah, I keep opening it and just thinking, what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
What am I going to do with that? Like, I literally just shut it. It's just getting more and more. But it's always like some kind of, like, it's always something semi-important from Australia when I made a film there once. And I've said, do I need to keep that? Has it got some sort of legal, will I be penalised if I throw it away?
But I don't know what it is. I hate them.
But you have made me think, maybe what we need is like another laundry basket that is basically dry clean limbo.
I need a cottage in the back of my house that's where my clothes live. Yeah. That would be really nice.
Limbo cottage.
Yeah.
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 Well, I'm sure there's lots of people out there with a floor drobe.
Please, if it's not just me, will you please email me, because these two are making me feel quite bad.
Oh, well, please do email us anyway. We actually love hearing from you. The email address for any topic suggestions you have is itjustmepodcast@gmail.com. Please do leave us reviews as well on iTunes. It really helps the show. And also do tweet us any suggestions for topics using the Is It Just Me hashtag.
And do go and see Lady Windermere's Fan.
Yes. Please do.
Really damn entertaining.
Just for the moustache alone. You've got to see the beast in its true real life form.
Yes, yes. It's going to be quite something by the time we finish. No, I am not going to.
I don't think I should allow that.
It's going. It'll probably run away of its own accord by the time we finish. Yeah.
But it's immaculate. To be fair, there's nothing in it.
Yeah.
No, that's because I have to comb it regularly just to get it to do what I want it to do.
Are you spending a fortune on, like, products like beard oil and all that kind of stuff?
I use a wax, moustache wax. Otherwise, I mean, I have to wax it a lot as well. Like, I put some on this morning and I can already feel I'm looking completely
mental.
It's
just like the real-life Ned Flanders.
I look like Ned Flanders. My kids say to me the other day, they said I had a green cap on, and they said, you look like Luigi. So I get Luigi, Des Lynam, and now, thanks to you, Joe, Ned Flanders. But no cool people like Tom Selleck or anything like that.
I think you're winning in, like...
Well, I feel like I am.
Just on being here.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me on the show. Love the show.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.